RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow. And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome in to the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Coming up here on this week's episode of the podcast, just in a couple of months, I'm going to be joined by Daniel Galvan to recap what happened last weekend at UFC 217 and Bellator 186, the UFC card. We saw three new champions crowned, and over at Bellator, we saw the inaugural women's flyweight champion crown, and we're going to preview a recap everything that happened on both those fight cards. Also coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast, we're going to talk to Robert Whatley, the LFA lightweight champion. He's got a title defense coming up on Friday night. Also, we're going to be joined by Nico Novelli and Dom Merriweather, who fight each other next week at Alaska FC on UFC Fight Pass. Also, we'll talk to Richie Santiago about his matchup coming next week at CES 47. And our final interview will be with Daniel Madrid, who fights next week in Arizona. Of course, I am brought to you by Fight TV. Fight is your gateway to everything fighting, MMA, wrestling, boxing, and more, live on your phone or TV. You can download the Fight app free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV /radio influence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV /radio influence/. Daniel, UFC 217. And Bellator 186 went down last week, and I really wanted to start off by our recapping of these fights is basically talk about the MVP of last weekend. And I think for a lot of people, they would probably pick Rose Namajunas. I mean, obviously shocking the world in what she did. But to me, I think the MVP has to be George St. Pierre, just because the UFC is in this position where they're dying for stars. They're dying for fighters that bring a different audience to the UFC pay-per-view, that can get a UFC pay-per-view 708,000 viewers. So for me, that's why I say George St. Pierre is the MVP of last weekend.
Yeah, man. And first and foremost, UFC 217, that main card was without a doubt one of the most fun times I've had watching a UFC card in a very, very long time. I mean, those three fights were MVP-type performances. They were just so either shocking or incredibly enjoyable. This is very much, if we're talking about the most valuable player here on this fight card, I think TJ Dillashaw is worth mentioning, but it's a lot like if you look back at the NBA, where you would say GSP and Rose are the Westbrook and Harden, the clear-cut 1-2, and then Dillashaw is like LeBron. You got to mention him, because that was just a phenomenal fight and a great win for him over Cody Garbrandt. Now he can call his shots. I see what you're saying with GSP, Jason. That fight obviously felt way more important. And in terms of value, the win that added more value to the UFC is undoubtedly George St. Pierre. Any George St. Pierre fight, whether it be against Robert Whittaker or someone else, is going to be one of the biggest UFC pay-per-views they'll do of any given year. But my MVP will go to Rose Namajunas. Maybe not for physical reasons. Obviously, there is the ethical reasons. In her post-fight interview, she was just about the nicest person in the world, professing positivity and hugs and smiles. Jason, I can't wait to give you a big wet hug. But to me, the reason why Rose is my MVP is she did something that I did not expect to happen at all. What a dramatic upset against a fighter in Joanna Champion, who earned that nickname, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. You know how great Joanna must have been in order for the vast majority of mixed martial arts fans to be able to pronounce her last name correctly? She's that damn good. We all know how to say Jędrzejczyk. She was almost a mythical legend. And for Rose to pull off that upset that I did not see coming at all, that to me is why she is my MVP. But Jason, I'm not hating on your GSP pick, because at the end of the day, these top three fights all gave us phenomenal moments. And not only that, moving forward, endless possibilities to look forward to.
The thing with Rose, and we talked about it a little bit on the preview podcast, we were talking about how big of a betting favorite that Ioana was. Like, look, you know, I mean, that's a huge amount, but it's the way Rose won it. And I don't know if you saw Ioana's interview on Ariel's show on Monday proclaiming she did not tap to those strikes. Instant replay, I think a lot of people would call that tapping.
Dude, that's come on, Ioana. Stop.
She's going all shells on it.
Stop it, Ioana. Jesus. Oh my goodness gracious. That was dumb. Don't say that, because that is tapping. Even if maybe that's not what she was trying to communicate. Jason, if I come up to you in public and punch you in the face and tell you, Jason, I didn't punch you in the face, that's not my intention. I still punched you in the face. At the end of the day, she tapped. It was incredibly clear. There were multiple taps. Rose saw it. Rose acknowledged it. And honestly, regardless of the tap, Ioana was over. Ioana was done. I don't necessarily know why she's – I liked originally kind of the point of view of Ioana's like, I'm not going to be a Ronda Rousey. I'm going to come and fight again. I'm going to get my title back. I like that version of her. Not a big fan of her kind of ignoring the tap. The way Rose won, you're right, it makes me think that Rose may be able to do it again, just because I'm not super – confident that Ioana Jędrzejczyk is going to be able in a rematch to finish Nami Hunis early. And I think if they fight again, Rose's ability to make contact is going to be a significant issue for Jędrzejczyk, because if they do rematch, even if Ioana gets the better of the striking, those small moments, I think Ioana is going to have to showcase she's going to be able to weather a storm. And that provided real questions of how she responds when she gets hit dramatically. Is she going to be able in a rematch get hit and return fire and not get finished? Because Nami Hunis showed in this fight, she is so damn explosive and really a special fighter. I mean, she prior to the knockout, Jason, the commentators, I want to talk about this, about the commentators. First off, the commentators, we can't blame them. They're talking about how like Rose should probably attempt to grapple a little bit to throw off Ioana. Rose didn't need to. But you know the problem I had with the commentators in this fight, Jason?
What's that?
Oh, you were watching this in a bar, right? So you couldn't hear it super well?
Correct.
Dude, Rose pulls off the upset. And in big moments, what is an announcer supposed to do? What is a color guy supposed to do in a big moment?
So you're saying that Daniel Cormier...
Thug Rose!
Dude. It was very WWE, yeah. It was very, but I mean...
He ruined a moment. When something crazy happens, you let the crowd deliver it, and it's not like Cormier was saying anything great, bro. He was just saying Thug Rose over and over again. It was redundant. Oh my God, I just had to put that out there. Daniel's great, but Jesus, that was bad. That was a special moment, and all I can think is Thug Rose.
Now, while we as we go on in recapping these fights, we are going to address a question that was asked to us from Brandon Guzman about matches to make for the winners from the UFC and Bellator main cards. With Rose, I think there's no question that Bellator is going to go, or the UFC is going to go straight to the rematch. I don't think there's another option they'll go with.
Yeah, dude. So, like, you look at the hopper for women's strawweight, and you got your eyes all over Cynthia Calvillo. She has a fight booked, and I believe she probably needs a little bit more. She's going to win, potentially one more, in order to continue to build her brand. This was the best-case scenario for the immediate short term when it comes to women's strawweight, because if Ioana wins, she may not have a very marketable challenger. But with the Rose Nami Hunis win, you get the biggest fight in women's strawweight history. You got to do it, without question. When you have upsets like this, no matter how dominant they are, a rematch is justified just because of the gap in what we thought each fighter's talent was heading into it. So you got to go a rematch. And this was a result that may have actually been best for business for UFC, because simply put, Rose Ioana number two is much bigger than any Rose strawweight fight they could have done. Any Ioana strawweight fight they could have done had Jędrzejczyk won. I mean, I don't know what the buzz would be regarding a Ioana Rose 2 headline a pay-per-view. It's uncharted territories, but surely I think it may be a big deal. I mean, this could be the best thing to happen to Ioana's name value, just because obviously she was super dominant, and we all know she has a great charisma, but she wasn't really translating as a star. Maybe facing adversity is what she needed to get to the next level. So yeah, you got to do the rematch. I think that's the clear fight to make.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ioana was right on the verge of potentially being a pay-per-view star. I mean, I think with Rose, in terms of getting her to where, you know, that non, you know, hardcore MMA fan is interested in watching her fight, I kind of do feel like having her headline a Fox card. You know, I don't think time-wise it's going to make sense, because I believe it's going to be the Orlando card in the end of February. That's going to be the Fox card to start the year. To me, I think that would make a lot of sense to have them headline that show. But I just think, I mean, you're talking about, you know, 3 months, and you're asking Ioana to come back that quick. I don't know if time makes sense, but or maybe it's a co-main event. Just maybe it's, you know, if they end up having Connor headline that March pay-per-view in Las Vegas, maybe that's where you put that fight, you know. And I think that's the question I have with Rose is can the UFC elevate her to the point of where Ioana was? Because I really feel that if Ioana would have won this past Saturday night, that her next fight would have been a main event of pay-per-view. That's the only question I have about Rose, is just can the UFC elevate her to superstar level?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the answer would be no, just because it's impossible to do such a thing. It really is difficult.
Can you sell that personality? That's
well, you
that's
can.
A question mark.
Ooh, that's interesting. Can you sell a good person? I don't know. She's a good person, but no, I don't know if we like good people.
No, she's a good person, but I mean, look, this is a fight game, and can she? With her personality, can she sell a fight to where that's going to get the casual sports fan to watch? And that's where I wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. Because the personality is pretty simple, right? It's just personality. I'm not judging her personality. I'm saying what she's presenting to people, like the perception. And it's not necessarily multifaceted. It's very simple. You have this person who just brings this incredible positive energy and wants to share with the world. I mean, I thought the post-fight interview was very, very fun to experience as it happened. I really thought that was a special moment. I thought with her mic work, she really connected with the crowd. I don't know if it's the most marketable personality per se. I think the marketable thing about Nami Hunis and why you got to feel better about headlining a show with the women's strawweight fight coming off of a Rose win rather than a Ioana win is because the fight itself, the rematch itself, is much more marketable than anything you could have done with Ioana. Because, I mean, looking down the strawweight rankings, every person has a loss to Ioana, except for the ones on the rise. I mean, again, the fighter you go back to in terms of who you would match up with Jan Jacek had she won would have been Cynthia Caviello if she beat Carla Esparza heading forward. I mean, the big winner here. And the big winner, if Rose wins in the rematch, would be every other women's strawweight, because it would open up. They would get out of the Joseph Benavidez slot and get a fresh matchup. I mean, this could be the best thing to happen to Andrade or Claudia Gadella if she's able to piece things together, or even Karolina Kovalkiewicz.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, those are the big winners. I'm not super sure, man. Not to jump around, but I guess that's what I'm about to do. I thought there were a lot of opportunities to make some of these fighters into stars. Like, you know, the guy that stuck out to me a lot, and it's obvious because he was dominant, he was on the main card. But Paulo Costa, like, this is going to be the test for the UFC on how they can develop stars, because Paulo Costa, for one, is incredibly entertaining, incredibly talented, looks damn good. Obviously, he's learning English for sure. But the UFC is going to have to make him into a star, I think. That's a lot of upside.
He could be a Brazilian model.
Big, I mean, he could be. He damn right, man. Not just a hand model with his fist of pain, but I mean, he looks like the second coming of Vitor Belfort.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the UFC looking for that next wave of Brazilian stars for the shows they're doing down in Brazil. Paulo Costa is that. I mean, it's obviously I picked him to win that fight, and it's just like when you saw him in there with Johnny Hendricks, it's just. It looked like two guys in two totally different weight classes.
Yeah, well, the thing is, like, so Johnny probably should be at 170, but I think for most middleweights, Costa's going to look like that. Like, he's the type of guy where what's the heaviest weight that you could be told where you wouldn't be surprised what it was? Like, oh, Paulo Costa, his walking around weight is 240. Like I don't know, man. He looks ginormous. He looks like a football player, really. He has that build, man.
You know, look, I doubt Johnny Hendrick gets another, you know, his. I doubt his next fight's in the UFC based on the run he's been on. But, you know, for him to compete in the UFC, he's got to figure out whether he can make 170 healthy.
Yeah, well, to be fair to Johnny Hendricks, this was a really crap opponent to prove yourself against.
Oh, because, UFC did no favors to him.
Dude, yeah. Like, okay, so Johnny's probably, he probably has significant issues when it comes to reclaiming his prime. And this was a very interesting juxtaposition, right, where you have GSP returning after the Hendricks fight to glory, and you have Hendricks and Undercard getting blasted. But for Hendricks, this may have been the worst-case scenario for him to tell how the move to Jackson affected his current fighting. So I do think, like you, if Hendricks is able to return to form or just return to a way he can utilize his wrestling to steal victories, it's probably going to be at 170 because the lack of strength he's giving up is going to really hurt his takedown. So, man, I feel like we've said this about Hendricks the past couple times about how this is the last time we'll see him in the UFC. Makes me think we'll see him one more time, maybe at 170. But, yeah, you're right. The UFC did him absolutely no favors. It'll be interesting to see how many different fighters Paulo Costa absolutely starches and embarrasses because, yeah, this was a great night for the UFC's bank account. I think you had three solid results for moving forward fights you could make. And on the undercard, you had a few guys rising up the ranks, like Paulo Costa would certainly be one of them where the UFC should hold him precious, be really smart about his matchmaking, and figure out how they can convey to the audience what he's already accomplished and what he's able to and just how violent he is.
Yeah, I mean, Paulo Costa would be interesting to kind of see who they put him up against. I was just looking at the top 15 at 185, and I don't know whether they'd want to do a Brazilian versus Brazilian matchup, but a fight against Thiago Santos, hashtag would watch.
That's exactly what I'm looking at, too. Really, what you want with Paulo is basically don't match him up with the wrestler. You want him to be in would-watch fights. Santos, down the line, maybe a fight against Uriah Hall would be something I could watch. But I feel like Hall may be like the very tip of the iceberg in terms of how high I would go up the rankings for Costa's next matchup. I think there's a lot of there's a lot of value in taking a little bit of time with this next matchup and giving him someone like Santos or even a fighter that is unranked but that is likely to give him an entertaining fight. I mean, I would love to see a Vitor Costa fight, but also that would be really bad because, like, Vitor's old and stuff.
Yeah, to get back to GSP, I will say this one thing about Michael Bisping, man. Those elbows he was laying off his back that cut GSP, I mean, was amazing what he was able to do there. You know, goes out on a shield, you know, goes to sleep there, GSP. I thought looked pretty good. Was he as fast as he once was? No. You know, and, you know, Robert Whitaker is a fight to make, but, God, would it shock you if they try to do GSP, Connor?
That's the fight I'm suggesting. That's the fight I would make. Yeah, when we got the question from Brandon, right? Brandon was the one that gave us the question. Brandon, thanks for the question. Look, Whitaker should fight George St. Pierre if this was a sport. GSP is the middleweight champion. Whitaker deserves a championship without an interim tag. Now, if I'm the UFC, I believe GSP would lose to Whitaker. This was a phenomenal performance out of GSP. There were some questions in this fight where he didn't look like a phenom, but he didn't have to, man. The accomplishment of beating Michael Bisping right now after being away for such a long period of time was amazing in and of itself. I'm glad you mentioned that period, and I think it was the third round, right, where Bisping was landing the elbows. Like he was scoring – okay, so if it's very rare that a guy off his back can win off of his back with strikes, but Bisping was doing just that with those elbows. Mm-hmm. Anyways, watching this fight, I simply thought Whitaker's literally faster than GSP, and that is a bad, bad thing for him at 185 on the feet against Whitaker. So I think Whitaker beats GSP. Now, if GSP loses, he's talked about retiring. That's sketchy. If I'm the UFC, there are two things you could go for. You could say if we do a year where we have a Conor fight and a GSP fight, we get two big pay-per-views, or we could just go for the mother load and get the biggest pay-per-view we could possibly do. I think that's the mode they're on with Conor. They get Conor, they look at which fighter in any damn weight class can we do and do a super fight. and it's GSP. That's the fight I would make. I'd make GSP McGregor, Jason.
Yeah, from a money sense, it's the biggest thing. And I think if you're the UFC, you probably got to look at Montreal or Toronto. Yep. That's where GSP's next fight does take place.
Just do it in the town square and do 400,000 people in attendance. Now, the question is, what's that weight at? So, like, you mentioned the lack of speed. And that's due to age, but obviously it has to be due to the muscle he put on. And so I guess he probably spent a lot of time adjusting his body. I do wonder how hard it's going to be for St. Pierre to move his body down in weight.
Yeah,
and alter that weight. So that could be the hindrance.
You know what? He's at what now, 36,
I believe? Yeah, it's not going to be this easy task to get down to 170 because GSP is the type of fighter that likes to take his time and do everything exactly the right way. So that could be the question. He could have found himself trapped where he has to fight Robert Whittaker, and that gives him a loss.
Here's the question with GSP, and I've seen a lot of people throwing this out there, and I don't know if we can really answer the question this time, but since GSP came back after being away for 4 years, moved up a weight class, and won the title, does he pass Anderson and Fedor as the GOAT?
Yeah. Yes, because this singular accomplishment is incredibly dramatic. And prior to that accomplishment, Jason, I feel like, well, first off, I feel like Fedor was number three significantly behind the Spider and GSP. And it almost felt like, and obviously John Jones is just in, you know, greatest of all time jail at this point. He's just, yeah. he's in the penalty box and the limit is very long. The time he's going to have to return and reel off five consecutive wins or something crazy like that. I don't know. But so assuming that GSP and Silva were in kind of the same position, this single performance probably is more value than anything Anderson Silva's ever done. Or just, I guess, man, GSP did have some big performances. I mean, just simple things like beating Matt Hughes and what was a big deal for his value at the time. But this single performance, the story of him coming back, and when you think of like the fables of the greatest of all time, the story of coming back after 4 years and taking on a champion of a weight class above you, that kind of solidifies you as the GOAT for the time being. Now, Demetrius Johnson may over time overtake him with the win over Dillashaw, maybe a run at Bantamweight Championship. But as we talk, Jason, and every time we do the greatest of all time, we're always talking about a fighter who just is coming off a victory. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you this, Jason, I feel pretty confident saying GSP was the greatest of all time.
Yeah, no, it's he definitely has made the case there. Dillashaw Garbrandt, you know, I think it's a fight that kind of lived up to what we thought it would be. You know, if Cody Garbrandt maybe has 10 more seconds in the first round, who knows, maybe he is still the UFC bantamweight champion. But, you know, you give TJ Dillashaw credit for being able to bounce back and to pull the knockout there of Cody Garbrandt. And, you know, as much as Dillashaw maybe wants Demetrius Johnson, and I think it's a fight the UFC would like to make. I still think that once again, going back to if we're talking about if this was a sport, not entertainment, I think it's got to be Dillashaw versus a winner of Dominic Cruz, Jimmy Rivera.
Yeah, dude, that would suck for Jimmy if he wins and doesn't get a title shot. What more must this man do? You know what would suck worse is he doesn't get the title shot, he beats Cruz and Garbrandt's next fight.
No, you know what would be worse? Rivera beats Cruz.
You're about to spoil it? Yeah, I wouldn't. Oh, wait.
And they go TJ Dillashaw, Uriah Faber.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah.
No, Uriah, you just can't cash in on something because you have a vendetta against TJ because he left your gym,
bro.
And he he's changed management teams that you're not involved with. No, it's like
gonna happen, dude.
Oh God, I pray to the UFC, don't give in to that. No.
Dude, my casual friend Ryan, he's the guy who listens to the Joe Rogan podcast. He's the guy I gauge how my fans are. He's always telling me about some type of weird drug that Joe Rogan live did on the podcast. And, you know, Eddie Bravo's conspiracy theory about Neopets or whatever. And he suggests, he's like, hey, what do you think about Faber Dillashaw? So that's where the mind is at for the Joe Rogan fans and the casual fans. That is a fight you could sell, Jason. And it's not a fight I'm looking forward to. I think Cruz Rivera deserved the shot. But if I'm making a match,
you know it's like 50-50 of them doing that fight, right?
I believe that fight's going to happen, dude. Like, that fight's You think Uriah Faber is the type of guy to retire and stay retired, man? Hell no. Hell no.
Yeah, it's just, I just hope the UFC doesn't go that route. I really hope they don't.
Dude, I mean,
when I saw, well, I think that article came out Monday morning, and I went, oh no, no.
Yeah, I mean, first off, Dillashaw's just got to hold on to the title. But, like, and the other issue is, so in flyweight, you got two guys that deserve a shot, too, Cejudo Pettis. Like, I mean, whoever wins that one certainly deserves a title shot. But I still think you do, Dillashaw Johnson. I really do, Jason.
But does it sell? I mean, that ultimately is the question.
I think it does 250,000 buys, which would be amazing for Johnson. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I am wrong. I don't know. Because, Jesus, that's hard. Similar to Ioana Rose, too, uncharted territories because we haven't seen DJ draw ever.
But here's also a question mark with TJ. Can he make 125? If the whole thought process, that fight's got to be at 125, and I know TJ said he can do it, you look at him, you know, weighing in on Friday, and there's part of me that goes, can he really drop another 10 pounds?
Yeah, he looked lean, mean, and mean, man. He's really into this new diet he's got going on where I think he moved specifically for this diet, whoever's making it. I think it may be a family or something.
Part of the move is, you know, Muscle Farm is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically the gym disbanded out there. And so that's why he's now back in California.
Yeah. It's also like a thing where, what would he actually perform like if he makes the weight? And so apparently, like, Dwayne Lugwade is flying in to train with Dillashaw, right?
Yeah.
That's weird. That's a weird dynamic. I just feel like that's real inconvenient. Unconvenient.
Oh, no. It definitely, I think for, you know, I mean, I guess if you're Lugwade and you're making enough money, you probably don't. It doesn't bother you. But
I tell you what, though, if I'm Demetrius Johnson and I care about legacies or whatever, to me, there's more value added to my legacy if I jump up to 135. It's not as fun for me. It's my home playing field at 125.
I just say meet halfway in the middle, 130.
Well, I'm saying jump up and defend the one, like, just become bantamweight. Like, if you're talking about becoming the GOAT, greatest of all time, you got to be the bantamweight champion and defend it multiple times. And defend it against Dominick Cruz, really. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think in an ideal world, hey, TJ, make a successful title defense before we're talking about this, too. I think that's the other part.
Yeah,
but
you do Cruz Johnson? Yeah.
Yeah, but I still think it's a fight the UFC definitely want to make. Stephen Thompson gets a win over Jorge Masvidal. You know, looking at welterweight, you know, I just think of, you know, we'll see what happens with Woodley. He's got that shoulder injury. Really, it doesn't appear to be a timetable on his return. You've got Lawler and Dos Anjos already matched up. You know, Dana's already come out and said that it's the number one contenders fight. I guess we should probably believe that's not the case because Dana said it. You know, how about Stephen Thompson, Colby Covington?
Ooh, I'm not a fan of that one for Stephen. I'm a fan of that one for Covington because the wrestling ingredient. Honestly,
yeah,
like,
yeah, but
Thompson,
Covington can't get him down.
That's
not
going to
go well
finish.
For him.
It's a first round finish. I mean, I'd probably pick Thompson. Yeah, tell you what, maybe that could be the fight to make. You're right. The more and more I think about the fight, like, I was originally, my head was at, like, maybe Carlos Condit won his next fight.
I thought if Condit won, that was another matchup that I thought, I was like, man, that, you know, you talk about maybe a Fox main event, you know, middle of 2018. Man, sign me up.
And then the other guy who just won in the main event, like Darren Till, he's on the outside looking in. And honestly, that may be a bad matchup because, like, again, Thompson's probably going to be the favorite in a lot of these fights because his stand-up in the Masvidal fight, it just looked like for Jorge George, who's such a great striker, he just couldn't do much. Like, he just felt helpless almost against kind of – it's almost like Stephen Thompson fights with this invisible barrier around him, and it's so hard to penetrate it other than throwing leg kicks. And I just don't know who's going to be able to beat him, so – if you're a matchmaker, you have to almost be looking at making this fight and knowing that Thompson is in this weird welterweight purgatory, the Benavidez zone, having two fights with Woodley, the last one being absolutely sloppy and boring, just a real, like how bad I would imagine Stranger Things season 5 will be when they're just going through the motions. And so I think you may want to protect a guy like Darren Till, but you either go with a fight that's going to have a lot of juice because Colby brings the juice in terms of marketability, or you go straight Wood Watch like Condit or Till.
When it comes to the rest of the UFC card, the preliminary card, you know, Corey Anderson, he was looking good for 11, you know, almost 11 minutes of that fight, and then boom, it is over. I feel bad for Corey Anderson because he is going to be on a UFC highlight reel for the rest of his life.
Yeah, dude, that head kick was it came from a damn cemetery, man. I mean, a couple of highlight reels on that prelims, huh? I mean, the first highlight we'll see is the spinning back elbow by Ricardo Ramos, but Anderson did look good. It's something where you got to feel good about him moving forward. OSP's really piecing things together. You know what perplexed me, though, was the calling out Ilir Latifi, you know?
Because when I think about bad matchups for Ovince St. Preux, Ilir Latifi's one of them because, I mean, look, in the fight with Corey, and I thought Corey did a great job with his striking and also his wrestling, but once again, you see the clear deficiency with OSP is takedown defense. And going against Ilir Latifi, man, not exactly, a great style matchup.
Yeah, and also, like, he provides zero name value. That's another issue for OSP, but, man, you know what? He can call his own shot. He's done a lot of favors to the UFC lately, so he'll get that fight if he wants it. I think it's not going to be the UFC is not going to. It's not like a young guy calling out a top five fighter. Like that fight could probably happen. Yeah, man. I feel like Corey Anderson's stock rose in my mind of the skills he brings to the table because this was kind of the best I thought his stand up has looked thus far. Mm-hmm. So a guy a light heavyweight to keep an eye on. And prelims were interesting, man. To me, like, the other headliner for the prelims was James Vick's finish over Duffy, man. What a great last-second win for Vick. And another fighter who really wants to headline that show in Austin. I don't know if he's going to get that. But, geez, he looks good. And that was a win over Duffy, especially on the feet. It's just a great way to go about it. His jab is going to take him a long, long way at 155.
And hopefully Vic finally does get that top 15 fight he's looking for. Godbeer gets a DQ win over Walt Harris. Of course, everyone has seen the comments from Walt. Look, at the end of the day, you know, the referee was stopping the fight for the illegal groin strike, and, you know, he still threw a head kick. And, you know, I saw the comments from Godbeer's manager saying that, you know, he was out. He was knocked out, and, you know, the commission ultimately stopped it. My guess is the UFC probably goes back to this matchup.
Yeah, I could see it. Do not believe this is going to be overturned. I really liked the use of replay in the Blades-Olenek fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just we need instant replay in MMA. We need it.
Yeah. It's valuable. It was really valuable. Cleared things up. Curtis Blades looked good. Yeah, do Godbeard, Walt Harris for the third time. We'll have them matched up on paper. And maybe this time a heavyweight will pull out and Mark Godbeard will fill in the place and Walt Harris will be left at the altar. And we'll do the fourth fight. And it will just be, they'll fight until 20 to 27. But yeah, tough one. Really, like, again, I don't understand how anyone would overturn this.
Yeah. And then Randy Brown gets the decision win over Mickey Gall. Dominating first and third round for Randy Brown. But then Mickey Gall did take the second round there. Over at Bellator 186. Of course, Ryan Bader becomes the third Bellator light heavyweight champion to make a successful title defense. Gets a TK win over Liv Vassell. Lumile McFarlane is the first ever women's flyweight champion Bellator as she defeated Emily Ducote via submission in the fifth round. Phil Davis, the decision win over Leo Lette. Ed Ruth, knockout win over Chris Dempsey. Saida Wad, the TKO win over Zach Freeman. Ryan Bader, I mean, clearly the matchup to make is King Mo. I think that's the route they're going to go. Lumile McFarlane, to me, it's probably a turnover if she gets to win. Phil Davis, I say Liv Vassell, but when you want to know why the UFC let Phil Davis walk, Bellator 186 is kind of a prime example.
Yeah, it was a bad fight. And look, Leo's a solid fighter for sure, but this was just something where what you would assume the gap between these two guys was enough where This should have been a showcase fight for Phil Davis, and he just didn't show it. I mean, this could have been an opportunity to put himself in a position to maybe challenge for a title if Vassell won or something. But moving forward for Phil Davis, I mean, he could get a fight with Lennon Vassell since he lost, but you did not watch this fight and really want to watch Phil Davis fight again, man. It's as simple as that. This one was a really rough one to watch, and I thought that the Bellator card overall was a bit of a long watch. I mean, but I did really enjoy the women's fight. I thought that was just a real test for both fighters. They really fought their hearts out. But yeah, leaving UFC, leaving the Bellator card, I thought Bader looked great. I thought Phil Davis looked completely forgettable.
You know, Ed Ruth, in terms of matching him up, I was looking at the Bellator middleweight roster. There really wasn't one that stuck out to me. You know, as I said, Mike Rhodes, I don't know if that's a route Bellator would go. Syed Awad, you know, he says he wants a big fight. I'm thinking Derek Campos, but man, maybe it's Benson Henderson.
That would be a big fight for him. I mean, he's done a lot of finishing. I think he deserves a major step up. I mean, I think both those guys do. I think Campos is probably what you go for. Henderson, you may want to put him in a better position just for him to get a victory, because Iwad is looking more and more lethal lately, looking better than ever. Ed Ruth, might as well rush him, man, because he looks great. Looked great in the first round, looked great with a couple of punches to end in the second. I maybe match up with Kendall Grove, I don't know. It's something where you have a middle-tier middleweight who's kind of struggling. And just moving forward back to the Bader fight, you know, great ability to control the fight with this ground and pound and get the finish. I really wish that King Mo Liam McGarry fight was still on, because I feel like that would have been the clear-cut winner. I mean, you probably just do King Mo anyway, but I really do think that, like, you could sell a McGarry Bader fight had Liam come in and beat King Mo.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens there. Of course, Bellator's got an event on Friday here in the United States, be the afternoon time overnight in Dublin, Ireland. It airs on tape delay here in the United States on Friday night. Back-to-back weeks we'll have of Bellator tape delay shows next week. The tape delay will be over a day, as that fight card's going to happen Thursday. Will not air till Friday here in the U.S. And, of course, on Saturday, we have got UFC Fight Night 120. Myself and Daniel are going to have a preview podcast for that one. Daniel, I don't get excited for too many fight night cards, but woo, I love that fight card on Saturday night.
Dude, we've been talking about this fight night card for like months, man. I mean, as soon as the fights were announced and you saw Poirier versus Pettis on top and you begin to analyze, you see all the names, you ask yourself, who are guys you would want to watch each and every time? Matt Brown, Diego Sanchez. Hell yeah, I want to see those two throw some bungalows. Joe Lozon's always due for entertainment. Dodson and Marlon Moraes is a great fight. And most importantly, the beautiful, the cute, the super hot and sexy Sage Northcutt. Ooh, can't wait to see that beautiful gent in the cage. Damn right. Ooh.
Yeah, it should be a great night of fights. Of course, on Friday, we will have the preview podcast, as we'll break down those fights coming up on Friday, so you'll be on the lookout for that. If you do have any questions for the preview podcast, just hit us up on Twitter at Jason_Floyd or at Daniel Galvan DGG. But of course, coming up on Friday night, we do have LFA 27 going to be headlined by a light heavyweight title fight, and I'm going to be joined next by their lightweight champion, Robert Whatley. Of course, won the title earlier this year. He's got his first title defense coming up on Friday night. So I had a chance to talk to him about his fight on Friday in Oklahoma. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence is the reigning LFA lightweight champion, Robert Whatley. Of course, won that title earlier this year with the win over Thiago Moses. Now defends the title for the first time in the main event of the LFA card on November the 10th in Oklahoma. Rob, man, I appreciate the time. You win the title. What was that night like for you after the fight was over? I mean, obviously you've been working so hard to, you know, get to this point. What was that night like?
It was, I guess the best way it would be surreal. You know, I didn't go into the fight thinking that There wasn't any chance that I could win. You know, I had thought there was a good chance I could win. I thought it was a 50-50 fight. You know, I could win just as easily as I could lose. But to go in and to, I wouldn't call it hostile territory because it wasn't where he was, but to go into a place I wasn't familiar with, I had a little bit of trouble cutting the weight because, you know, I wasn't familiar with the area and some of the things. And to be able to go out there and perform the way I did, it was just such a blessing. And it was like, I got done with the fight and I was like, all right, I'm ready to fight. But it was, you know, it was over. And, you know, I ended up running into Ed Source at IHOP afterwards. So, I mean, talk about how surreal the night was. And he was just like, man, I don't know where you came from, but that was one heck of a performance, kid. So keep doing what you're doing. So it's, I mean, I'm still, even now, I'm like, I'm defending my belt. Oh my goodness.
How do you assess your performance in that fight? I mean, I know you're probably, you know, if not your harshest critic, one of your harshest critics. I mean, as you sit back, I mean, I'm sure you have probably watched that fight countless times and picked apart everything you did wrong in the fight. But overall, I mean, how do you, if you're going to give yourself a grade in that fight, what would the grade be?
I thought that for the fight, because I think both of us, both Thiago and I, we took a step up in our competition, fighting each other. So I think from how I performed on the level stepping up that I did, I think I did really well. I'd give myself probably like an 8 out of 10. But, you know, as we've talked about before, this isn't where I believe the journey ends. You know, I love being an LFA champion, but, I'm trying to take this as far as I can go. So in saying that, that's not a performance that's bringing me home like a UFC championship. That's not what I think my ceiling is. So there are definitely some things that I wanted to work on. There's, feeling a little more comfortable in the pocket, my hands a little bit more. And when I see the opportunity to finish, when I see, you know, the green light, I gotta hit the gas sometimes, and it's okay to finish people. I like to go out there and try things and experiment a little bit and have fun. But I need to be able to display that I can put people away when I have the opportunity.
And now it's Darryl Wilson as your first title defense. In terms of preparing for a fight as a champion, as opposed to a challenger, is there any differences?
Yeah, it's weird. I was just reading an article that GSP just did, and he said there's like this feeling of everybody's looking at you. There's just a target on your back, and everybody's coming and wants what you have. So I would say that it's actually easy getting there, but the hard part is staying there, because nobody knew who the heck, you know. I think you were one of the like three people that interviewed me before my last fight. And so now it's expected that I perform at least as well as I do against Moises, if not better, to beat this guy. And it's ramp stuffed up for me. It's really made me think like these guys are coming for something I have. This is my opportunity to provide for my family. This is my opportunity to really set my career off. And people are trying to take that away now. So, while training is still, you know, training, there's an urgency about it now.
Would you say more pressure?
I guess so. I would say yes, pressure. But I guess pressure is, you know, what you make of it. It can be a very negative and demeaning thing, or it can be something that you use to, you know, push the drive or stoke the fire a little bit more. So, you know, I'm learning to become friends with pressure. And as you know, as I'm going to be main eventing events, holding world titles and continuing this journey, you have to be best friends with pressure, because it's not going anywhere until you're done.
You know, there's challenges in every fight, whether, you know, maybe for this one, maybe it's just a challenge of, hey, you know, I've got guys who are coming after me because I'm now the champion. But for Darryl, is there other challenges that he offers you that maybe just get you excited to test your abilities?
Oh yeah. That's great that you touched on that. You always hit great subjects, but I love being the smaller guy, in the cage. For some reason, it's like a David Goliath feel to it. It's a true underdog story. I mean, I came up on, you know, Gladiator and watching all the, you know, Chinese Connection and Bruce Lee movies where it's, you know, weak man of Asia, or, you know, this guy who's pitted against all these people in this arena that he's not supposed to beat. I love that feeling, that story of having to overcome something. So being able to face one, he's a kid who's been doing this for a long time. He is he's big. He's a very big kid for the weight class. I think he's 6'1 or 6'2, so going to be one of the bigger people that I've ever fought. And it's in his hometown. This is, you know, this is his place. This is his backyard. So all of those things, I think, they combine to make what I find to be an incredible background and storyline. And it just, like, I close my eyes and I'm like, fighting in 2 weeks. And I'm like, fighting in 2 weeks. Like, oh, I'm getting like so stoked for this. It's really an awesome, awesome opportunity.
I remember the last time we talked about the relationship of you and your wife, of how she will, you know, kid you about, you need to watch tape, whatnot. Has there been any moments during this camp where she is like, you need to get in front of that television and watch your opponent?
Dude, if I hear one more time about what his right hand could do to me, I'm like, I'm going to fight you. You throw your right hand at me. I'll show you. I'm working on it. But no, man, everybody, as soon as we found out the opponent's name, my dad, my mom, my fiance, we're all on it. My coaches. So we've watched everything we can on him. He obviously has gotten better from his loss. He's went back to the drawing board and worked on some things. I think there's some areas that I can definitely expose, but I definitely have to be careful. I mean, the guy, he's a finisher. He's finished his last, what, three fights. He had a one punch knockout of his, in his last fight to get this title shot. So, you know, we're very aware of what it is that he brings, into that cage, and, you know, just excited to be able to see how we're going to counteract it and see, you know, what our two styles to, together combine in that cage to, you know, make a performance.
How much of fight night is just read and reacting?
I would say if you're victorious, then the majority of your night was read and react. And a lot of losses are overthinking. You can't get into a situation, especially with somebody that you've never fought before, that you don't really know anything about him. You can't get in there and just be like, well, he just jabbed me, so, you know, I'm thinking he's probably going to throw, bam, and you're done. So I think it all is read and react. And that's goes back to what you asked earlier about preparation as a champion. It's I don't have the luxury of just preparing for one opponent now, because if he got hurt, you know, I was getting another opponent. You know, they were going to find somebody for me to, you know, continue that title defense against. So I just have to be as well-rounded in all of the facets of MMA as I possibly can be. And I mean, dude, watching Mighty Mouse, I know you saw that armbar.
That's crazy. And then, how many guys in your gym the next day were trying to pull that off?
Oh, people were either hurting other people or hurting themselves trying to do that stupid flying armbar. I'm like, it's just Mighty Mouse. Just leave it alone. He's a genius.
It's crazy. It's just, it's absolutely, I mean, I still can't believe he was able to pull that thing off. And it's just once again, just shows why he is as great as he is. You know, because I think, you know, and you know this as a champion. I mean, look, the target's on your back, but he takes a lot of risk, even as a champion. And I think that, to me, is what blows me away with him, is that he's willing to take those chances that could put him in a bad position if they don't work out.
You're right. You're right. And you that comes from everything that he's done. He's had to done it both in his head and physically hundreds of thousands, if not millions of times. Mm-hmm. And like he said, he's like, I've done that in practice, you know, however many times. It wasn't a matter of thinking about whether or not to do it, read and react.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's amazing to see what he has done. And, you know, and of course, how many videos I saw. I mean, Bilal Muhammad had a great tweet about it, just about how all the guys there at his gym were trying to pull it off. But you know, this is another great opportunity for you, another, you know, to showcase what you can potentially do for, you know, obviously the bigger promotions out there. Do you see the victory coming a certain way?
I think that this is going to be kind of like The last performance, I would say, was kind of like it was kind of pretty. It was like a nice little masterpiece, nice little light, strokes with the paintbrush. But I think this one, this kid's rangy. He's tough, and I'm gonna be fighting him in his backyard. So it's gonna get gritty. It's gonna get dirty. We're going to be trying to hurt each other. So I mean, I think it's gonna end brutally. Whether it's me or him, I don't have any false hopes that I don't believe I'm invincible or anything. I know anything can happen in there, but we're going to mix it up and somebody's going to get hurt that night. So for people who love to tune in and see heads gets bounced around, this is going to be a good one.
Final thing, you mentioned a little earlier about how you love being the smaller guy. What's the advantages and obviously the disadvantages, hey, he's bigger. I mean, that's a clear disadvantage. But what are some of the advantages and maybe some of the disadvantages of being that smaller guy?
I guess just in general, being the smaller guy is you always have to, like, think your way through every situation. It's not just a matter of, well, I'm just going to push this guy off me or I'm just going to muscle him down. It's you become so much more technically sound, and you really have to be sure that your technique is on point because you don't have the weight to throw behind it to just be like, well, this ain't working. Well, I'm about to just chuck this dude over my head because I outweigh him by 15 pounds. So it's really going with larger people in my gym and training with larger guys. It's really made me go back to the drawing board and be like, that was not technically sound. It can work, but it needs to be technically sound in order to work. So it really keeps me sharp. And it's not like you can just, like, I think Moises was a pretty thick, he was a pretty muscular guy, but I believe I walked into that cage probably 10 pounds heavier than him at least. And so it psychologically walking in, I was like, I'm gonna lean on him. I know I can lean on him and give him trouble. I know I can make him struggle to breathe. And that was a part of the strategy. But knowing that now this guy can lean on me and I have to try to do everything I can to make every situation as taxing on his body as I can. So just keeping sharp and finding little tools to be able to turn what most people would think is a disadvantage into an advantage.
And, of course, we're all going to be able to see that fight on Friday night, November the 10th, the main event of the LFA card there in Oklahoma. Robert, as always, man, I appreciate time. And, of course, let everyone know they can follow you out on social media.
All right. Thanks again for having me, Jason. And follow me on Twitter at Robert Watley 89. And you can follow me on Instagram at Robert Watley.
And there you have my conversation with Robert Watley. I really appreciate Rob coming on the podcast, talk about his fight coming up on Friday night at LFA 27 as he defends the LFA lightweight title for the first time as he is challenged by Darryl Wilson. Now, this fight card is going to be coming from the Fire Lake Arena in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Of course, you can watch this event live on Access TV, and it's going to be really interesting to kind of see on Friday night what is MMA Twitter like. Are people still tweeting about Bellator, which, of course, has a taped-delayed show over from Dublin, Ireland, which is going to be headlined by AJ McKee, or will they be talking about this this LFA fight car, which also your co-main event is a light heavyweight matchup, as it'll be Myron Dennis against Ryan Spann. But in terms of that main event, Robert Watley, of course, coming off that big win earlier this year to claim the LFA lightweight title as he defeated Thiago Moises via unanimous decision. Of course, Rob has not lost since his pro debut. Now he takes on Darryl Wilson, which according to Tapology, he's 7-1 Sherdog, only has him with the record of 5-1. I've been more leaning on going to Tapology of late, but so he is coming off a win at LFA 18 back in August of this year. Of course, that was a win over Jared Carr, a win in 64 seconds, and he's been on a nice little win streak here. He's won 5 in a row. His last 4 wins have all come by stoppage. 2 of those have come in the very first round. So, you know, when you look at LFA, I mean, look, LFA is no doubt, it is a clear path to potentially getting into the UFC. We have seen LFA fighters go over to Bellator as well, and ultimately it comes down to is, you know, does Bellator offer a contract here? But when you look at Robert Watley, if he goes out there and gets a win here, it would not shock me if his next fight's in the UFC, or at least maybe his next fight is on the Contender Series. I have heard some things that maybe the Contender Series is not going to start back up in January here, maybe a little later than January. But that is something that, you know, obviously I do love the Contender Series there. Now, when you look at the rest of this LFA card, we'll talk about the co-main event of this fight card. Of course, that is going to be a light heavyweight matchup, Myron Dennis against Ryan Spann. You know, Dennis is coming off a win against Brandon Groom at Extreme Fight Night 343 back in August. Prior to that, he got a split decision win at LFA 9 back in April of this year. Prior to that, he had lost back-to-back fights. And of course, you may remember him from the Ultimate Fighter season 23. He did lose in that show to Andrew Sanchez. He did get one win on that show, but ultimately did lose to Andrew Sanchez on that season, a guy to definitely pay attention to. And then when you look at Ryan Spann on the other side of this fight, he's coming off a win at LFA 23. Of course, you may remember Ryan from his stint on Dana White's Contender Series. He was on the third episode as he took on Carl Roberson, and he lost in 15 seconds. It's been up and down for Ryan Spann over, you know, this year. You look back at beginning of this year, took on Trevin Giles at LFA 3. He lost that matchup via split decision. That's where he had lost back-to-back fights prior to that. A loss against Robert Drysdale. Then he came back and he got a win in May in 22nd submission win at WFC 72. Then the loss against Carl Roberson, and then the win against LaMarcus Tucker at LFA 23. So he is actually looking to put together back-to-back wins for the first time since 2015. That year, he won three in a row. So, you know, LFA always puts on good fight card, so look forward to seeing what happens on that fight card. You know, a lot of, you know, this is a fight card that obviously you're going to see a lot of Oklahoma talent on this fight card with it being in Oklahoma. And look, in LFA, they're a regional show. They depend a lot on those local ticket sellers to get people in the door. You know, another matchup I'll mention here, Derek Atkins against Alexander Hernandez at 155 pounds. And, you know, Derek Atkins, kind of like we just mentioned with Ryan Spann, a guy that's been up and down, you know, 2-2 in his last four fights, alternating wins and losses. You know, he is coming off a win at LFA 18 back in August, so he'll look to get back-to-back victories for the first time since 2016, where he had won three in a row. On the other side of that fight is Alexander Hernandez, who is 7-1 in his career. He is coming off a win at RFA 41 back in July of last year, a submission win on that night. He has not fought since that matchup, but he's been on a nice little roll here, so a matchup definitely to pay attention to there at LFA 27. As I mentioned, that'll be on Access TV on Friday night. So, you know, a ton of, you know, as a MMA viewer, you have options. You can watch the tape delay show with Bellator 187, or you can watch the live card with Access TV. Maybe you DVR one, watch the other one, or vice versa, whatever it may be. So look forward to seeing what goes down there at LFA 27. But coming up next, we're going to talk to two fighters who are going to be in the main event of the Alaska FC show next Wednesday, November the 15th, live on UFC Fight Pass, Nico Novelli and Dom Merriweather. We're going to let you hear both those interviews. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the state of UFC Fight Pass and the cost of being a UFC fan in 2017. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence is a man that's going to be taking on Dom Merriweather at Alaska FC for the featherweight title November 15th live on UFC Fight Pass. It's Nico the Natural Novelli. Of course, you probably recognize that last time as we talked to his brother before here on the show. Nico, I appreciate the time. You know, one of the things, though, when I talk to guys in a title fight, you know, and more times than not, it usually comes up the first time they have a title fight, is, you know, preparing for a five-round fight. But this is a familiar road for you. You've been down this road before. Do you look at five-round fights differently now as opposed to your first five-round fight?
Well, I've had more five-round fights than I've had three-rounders. So, but this is actually not a title fight. So this is at 155 at lightweight.
Oh, we got to tell your people that because they told me it's for the title.
Oh, no. No, not this one. No, this one's at the lightweight, and hopefully the next one, well, definitely the next one will be at the featherweight and to do a title defense. Mm-hmm. But this one we're is definitely at lightweight, and so I get to eat a little more, you know. So happy me.
They always talk about you know, when you're up a weight class, how you just, your body will feel different on fight night. For you, what is the big difference? I mean, obviously you don't have to cut to get down to 45, but do you see a difference in yourself when you fight at 55 as opposed to 45?
No, I walk around at the same weight. So yeah, I have to diet more and cut a little bit more calories, but you know what I mean? With my weight, but at 55, I mean, I feel stronger. But here locally in Alaska, it helps to fight at two weight classes, you know, so I can stay more active. But, anything out of here is definitely, I want to stay at featherweight.
Being a, I guess you say, fighting is a family business with you and your brother. Yeah. You know, what's that dynamic like for you and your brother, since, you know, he is a little older than you and has made it to the UFC? I mean, do you try to just kind of lean on him just more as advice? And do you guys spar with each other?
I definitely look to him for advice. He's definitely has more experience than me. But he lives in Portland, but we always make it, and we're pretty active seeing each other, of him coming here, me going there, and we do spar with each other. Not to say who gets the better of that, but, we do put in some rounds, and definitely every time I go with him, I'm learning something.
I've talked to the Lima brothers about that, because they spar against each other, and I'm always like, Do you find it tough, like, you know, throwing that trigger since it is your brother?
No, we'll go at it, but, you know, it's all love in the end, you know. So, and we definitely learn and take things off of each other.
Your nickname, The Natural, you know, how'd you get it?
Basically, I mean, just the fight game is just a natural thing to me. You know, it wasn't like I was learning from the beginning. I went into MMA, went into boxing, wrestling when I was younger, went into MMA, and it was just a normal thing to me, everyday thing. So that's how I got the name The Natural.
One of the things we always hear in the fight game is, hey, this guy's got a great work ethic. What does that mean to you, of having a great work ethic?
It means everything. I mean, if you're not into this to leave everything in a cage and to get that W, then... And if you're not working for it, it's going to show. So this fight, this one coming up at AFC 135, the work I put into this, they're definitely going to see the best me. I'm there physically with no injuries on this fight. And I honestly, this is the first fight I've gone into without an injury of some sort, mentally, physically, I'm there for this fight, and I can't wait to put it all out there.
Of course, the last time you stepped in, you did suffer a defeat. Is it one of those things, rearview mirror? Is this one of those things that you constantly think about?
On the last one, you know, I don't make excuses. He was the better man, and we're looking to still go and get that belt back. Because, you know, I enjoy having two different belts at two different weight classes here. So, you know, that's always nice. But definitely, had some things going on, but no excuses. He was the better man. But I'm not one to call a fight. And I will fight through the past two of my fights. I've had some injuries and I went in there. So on a featherweight title defense and then a lightweight title defense. So, this one, definitely the healthiest I've ever been. And working out 2-3 sometimes 4 small workouts a day right now, doing it full time. I feel great. I feel energy. And this is a 3-round fight instead of 5 fives. So I'm definitely pushing the pace, and the output is going to be shown every round.
And I was told it's you train at rival gyms. So what's that? You know, is it, how big of a rivalry is this?
You could call it a rivalry. We're the two biggest gyms in town. Ours is Legacy Jiu-Jitsu, who I'm a part owner of. I started that one with a couple friends of mine, and it just blossomed into a great thing. At one point, we had 6 of 8 belts, so I don't know if you would call it a rivalry. You know what I mean? So, but definitely, they train hard. They have fighters. I mean, with MMA and jiu-jitsu, that definitely is the competition here for us locally. So without them, hey, I mean, we'll be searching for fighters. So I'm glad they're there.
Being a gym owner, what's the toughest part about balancing your schedule of, you know, obviously running a business, but also preparing for a fight?
When I prepare for a fight, it's just, it's all about the fight camp. The business is run through our one of the owners. He's Jordan Contra, and he's there full time. He's our black belt instructor, and he does the majority of the work. So it's kind of a little easy on me. So it's a blessing to have him there. And but when I have a fight camp, I mean, as a gym owner, I have a key. So hey, if I can't sleep at midnight, I'm going to the gym and I'm doing some work. So it's a good thing.
I always ask a lot of guys this, when you're working your jiu-jitsu, gi or no gi?
No gi, and even if I do gi, I'm wearing MMA gloves. So a little different, you know, my grips. So, but a lot of no gi with my camp, but I definitely don't just completely stop with the gi.
In terms of Dom, the opponent here, what sticks out to you about his abilities?
He's athletic, and, you know, that's about all I could say about him. He's athletic. He took the fight. He's pretty young into his career. The fights that he's taken are guys that have very minuscule experience. So he's definitely taking a step up, but, you know, I respect him for taking it. He's undefeated. So for him, it was his time to step up. And for me, he's a guy that's undefeated in the lightweight weight class here locally that, you know, I have to get out of the way. So we're going to meet November 15th, and it's going to be fireworks.
As we're talking, we're under 2 weeks away from this fight. So what is the next 2 weeks like for you?
I'm still going hard this week. And then we're going to lighten it up, you know, next week and ease into the fight. But definitely we're still at the point where we're going to start peaking, you know, and then I'm going to level out and we're going to go put in some work November 15th.
Another question I've been asking a lot of guys is about rule changes in MMA. We've seen, you know, there's kind of an emphasis on that of what can the sport do to evolve. If you had any recommendation on a rule change, what would it be?
Rule change. The rule changes as it is, I'm pretty comfortable with. The 3-point stance is kind of the gray area, because when we've seen guys get hit, and if my hand's not fully down, then I need it is legal. But who's to say? I would just say to not attempt the knee. And then we don't have that gray area, because we've seen fights finished, especially with Chris Weidman. We've seen that, with, you know, and that was a gray area. His fingers were touching, but not all the way down, got kneed, and then they counted it. You know, it was legal. So in that, I would say, just if their fingers are down, don't throw the knee. And then we don't have that problem. But besides that, I mean, the rules, they're doing a great job, I think, you know. So
I think the one rule that I'm kind of would like to see, maybe it, I don't know if it's a rule change or maybe it's just an emphasis on the rule change, is the grabbing of the cage when you're stopping a takedown.
True. But you could call it dirty, but it's sometimes it's a reaction. I mean, you're falling down, you put your hand in, it hits the cage. You know, you grab the cage, your fingers go in there. They're not going to pull a point off of that. They're just going to, they're going to give you a fair warning. And that's, I mean, it's a game, so people use that to their advantage. So they're going to get a warning, maybe 2 warnings, and not stop a takedown. And some people use that. I mean, it is what it is. And if you don't like it, it doesn't, then don't fight, because things happen. So go along with it.
It's kind of like I say in the NFL. It's not a penalty unless they call it on you. Yeah. But I think for me, it's more about when it happens, when you see it happen 5 or 6 times, And then, the referee doesn't do anything about it.
Yeah, it needs to be addressed at that point, especially if the fight's close and a takedown might sway the judges this or that way, or, you know, but it, so in that manner, yes, it happens in the first round or something like that. You let things go, but definitely the warnings and then the points being taken. Because I've definitely done it before, but accidental, you know? So, I mean, it happens.
You mentioned about takedowns, and I've really never talked to a guy about this, and I'll get your thought on it. When, let's say you know you're in a close round, there is, let's say, 45 seconds ago, is automatically in your mindset, let me try to get a takedown to seal this round?
I'm always shooting for the finish. So, I mean, if you're thinking point-wise, I mean, yeah, you go for the takedown, dominate, and show that I dominated the round. Or just stand up and bang. Stand up and throw more output, and you ain't got to worry about doing a takedown. So, just winning the round, you always want to win the round, but I don't really want to look at it like that. I'm going to go in there and always look for the finish and always trying to find that weakness and exploit it.
And we're going to have to tune in on November 15th on UFC Fight Pass to see you search for that finish there at Alaska FC, taking on Tom Merriweather. I really appreciate the time, Nico. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media if you want to shout out your sponsors, all that stuff, man.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to shout out to AK Fades, China Garden. These are all stores here locally. Dooley's Athletics, the Alaska Fur Gallery, Legacy Jiu-Jitsu, definitely all the people that have helped me and supported me, Ariat, Alaska. And you can find me on Nico Novelli MMA on Instagram or Nico Novelli on Facebook. So give me a shout out, give me a like, but I'm definitely going to leave it all on the line. And for all the support, you know, I appreciate it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence is a man that's going to be fighting at Alaska FC November 15th on UFC Fight Pass. It is Dom Merriweather, 5-0 in his career. Dom, I appreciate the time. First off, how has training been for this fight?
Oh, it's been a grind. I'm training off and on, whether it's, you know, 6 days a week or 7 days a week. I'm putting in as much work as I can. I was a bouncer at one point throughout this fight camp, and I'm still working a full-time job, and I was, you know, getting off from being a bouncer at 4 a.m. and going straight to the gym and getting extra work in by myself and just, you know, putting in that extra work. My coach has told me to enjoy, to love the grind, and learn to love the grind, and that's exactly what I've been doing this entire time. I've been training with, you know, the guy who is main event. He's also my teammate, or co-main event, who's also my teammate, Charlie Johnson. And, you know, we've just been battling in the gym this entire last 5 weeks, and we feel ready. We're prepared anywhere it goes, and you know, win or lose, we're gonna be that arena is gonna be loud, and they're there for us.
You mentioned about training 6 or 7 days a week. Is it one of those things where if you only go 6 days a week, it's more about using a day of rest just to recoup your body and, you know, make sure that you're gonna be in, you know, peak condition come fight night?
You know, hold on. It's not about, you know, resting. Rest is not something I was looking for. It was about, you know, I just got custody of my daughter 50-50. And, so, you know, whenever I did have her on Saturday nights, you know, I had her Saturday nights, almost this entire fight camp just for one night. So some of those nights I was like, yeah, I'm not going to train this day. I'm going to spend time with my kid. But, you know, now I have 50-50, and, you know, I have an awesome partner that helps me take care of my kid when I'm at the gym, and she's, you know, meal prepping for me. So it wasn't about being tired. It was just about when I needed to put the work in and when I needed to spend time with my kid.
And that was one of the things that was said to me about you. Your daughter is your number one motivation. Is it one of those things of those days where you're just, you know, you're dead tired? You just kind of think of her and say, you know what, I'm in the gym, you know, putting all this work in for her.
It's the fact that, you know, my dad was very supportive of sports. He was a very good man when it came to sports, but my dad didn't know how to be a dad. And even if he was alive today, there's not a single thing that my father could have taught me about being a parent. So, you know, I took bits and pieces from people that I grew up with in foster care and boys' homes. And you know, my mom and I are very close now. We weren't close for a while. And I'm going to give my daughter everything that I didn't have. And I'm going to die doing so. And so, you know, she comes first. I mean, this past year I was paying child support in the amount of $780 a month. And there was times where I didn't have money for food for myself after paying rent and my bills and everything else. And I had enough money to buy myself food or my daughter food. And I'd buy my daughter food every time, and I would starve for a week until I got paid again. That's just, she's my number one. She deserves everything, and I'm going to make sure she has it.
And one of the things that was said to me is you want to, you know, eventually use your notoriety as an MMA fighter to get more involved in the community. You know, is there certain aspirations you have of what you want to do in the community as your career goes on?
See, Alaska is my home state, and you know, a lot of people claim that they support Alaska, but no one does what I do. I mean, I go out on the weekends, I coach kids, I worked for Campfire for years, and all I did was coach kids. And I believe fitness is the biggest key to success with these kids, and along with fitness comes healthy eating. And my goal, you know, later on is to start my own camp, whether it's, I don't even care what kind of camp it is, as long as I'm helping these kids. Because, you know, like a lot of these kids here in Alaska are foster kids. A huge population are foster kids. And when I was a foster kid, I felt like no one was there for me. And I want these kids to know that they have someone that's there for them, someone they can talk to at any time. I'll give my number to any agency. Any kid can call me whenever they want, when they have any kind of questions, whether it's night or day, and I'll be there to support those kids. It's just, we need to stand up more for these kids that are, you know, in need like this. Cause they like, it doesn't matter, you know, I mean, and it sounds weird saying that, but adults, we don't matter as much as these kids, because they're the future of our nation. They're the ones that are going to be dictating our future when we get old. And we need to take care of them, and that's my goal, is to continuously take care of the future of our nation and look after them, whether it's fitness, nutrition, helping them, you know, if I can financially. Like, money comes and goes, and I'll give it away if I have extra.
And, of course, that could lead to being the people's champion. When you hear that term get thrown out, what does that mean to you?
Oh, man, I love it. I love it. I love it so much. I am the people's champion, and that's never going to change. I love hearing that. If I don't win some flashy belt, that's fine. I know where I stand. I know where I am. My fans, my friends, my family, they all know where I am. They know what I do. When I hear people's champion, that just excites me. And it lets me know what I've done. I've gone from a kid with dreams to a man with an opportunity. And now I'm this man with an opportunity, and I'm a dangerous person. You know, whether I win or lose, I'm a dangerous person. I'm an underdog, or I am the main attraction. I am a dangerous person, and anyone's a dangerous person when they get in there. But, you know, that's why I don't look past anyone, and no one should look past me.
And, of course, Nico Novelli, the opponent here, rival gyms. I did have a chance to talk to Nico, and he kind of downplayed the rival gym, saying, hey, you know, when it's a little one-sided, I don't know if it's a rivalry. But for you, what's your thoughts of Nico as an opponent?
I think Nico is a fantastic athlete. You know, he was the 155-pound champion until April, when he lost it to Vince. He's the current 145-pound champion. He's 6-1. He's a spectacular athlete. He has a style that's, you know, hard to really train for. And you know, whether he thinks it's not a rivalry or not, it's definitely a rivalry. I mean, I've heard a lot of things about that gym hating me, and you know what? And for everyone at that gym that doesn't like me, you guys can go ahead and keep hating me. I don't care. I'm not here to impress you guys. I'm not here for you to like me. I'm going to continue fighting until my daughter tells me she wants me to stop. And that's when I hang up my gloves. So I don't care if you hate me. Hate as much as you want, because you're going to pay to watch me fight whether I win or lose. And when I win, you're going to keep paying anyway. So it doesn't faze me one bit.
But that's a great, you know, that's what you want as a fighter. You want 50% of the people to love you and 50% to hate you, because it's probably the people that hate you want to come to the fight, see you fight, maybe more than people that love you.
See, I don't care who hates me. I grew up with people hating me. I grew up with people liking me. I've already sold 120 tickets to this fight. I've sold 7 tables to this fight. You know, I have people all across the U.S., people in London, people in Australia watching this fight on Fight Pass. I don't care who hates me, because I'm going to go out there with one mission, and that's to finish Novelli. Whether I do it or not, whether he beats me or not, that's still my goal. And that's not me running my mouth. That's the obvious factor. That's what I'm going to do. Novelli has not been finished, and in order for me to get noticed, I need to do something spectacular, and that's my goal, to finish him. You know, I'm not saying that it's going to happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen in one way, shape, or form. That's my goal, and he needs to expect it.
Is there a preferred method of finishing the fight, or you just don't care?
I don't care how I finish the fight. I'm gonna do it any way I can. I'm not gonna take any shortcuts. Any way I can finish that fight, if the opportunity comes, I'm going to grab it. That is, you know, this is, I'm the underdog in this fight. Everyone's looking over me. Everyone's looking past me. People are talking about me at their gym, and I hear it. It comes back to me. I'm the popular boy here. This is my state. You know, everyone talks to me about what Nivelli says. Some of his teammates are coming up to me telling me they hope he loses because he beats them up in the gym during practice and throws knees and elbows during practice. That's perfectly fine. Throw your knees and elbows. I don't care. We're training everywhere and that's fine. It's pretty bad when your teammates come to the opposing gym and talk to that person about how they want their teammate, their gym owner, their coach to lose. That's bad.
Oh no, obviously that's bad. I mean, do you think Nico is underestimating you in this fight?
I don't think Nico's underestimating me, and I don't think that the coaches are, maybe a few of them, but I think that some of his teammates are definitely underestimating me. But you know, I worked hard for this fight. I mean, I was struggling to stay above 170 pounds this entire fight camp. I've trained that much. I'm burning, you know, more calories than I'm intaking, and I'm not even trying. I'm merchandising, throwing, you know, hundreds of cases of beer a day, and then I'm going to the gym, and then I'm going to run 5 miles after that. You know, so I don't care what they have to say anymore. It doesn't matter, because you know, Nivelli and I are going to get locked in that cage, and whether I go to sleep or he goes to sleep, or he gets the decision or I get a decision, someone's hand's being raised, and we're both making history. You know, I'm helping him in a way with the promotion of this fight, because you know, I'm a big name, regardless of being a champion or not. I'm a big name. You know, people hear about me fighting on fight cards, and they want to go. They want to go. I sell tickets. I hold the record for ticket sales. That is me, you know. So you're welcome, Nivelli, for selling these tickets and getting you some more notice. And thank you for this opportunity, and I'm blessed for it.
Is work kind of like a third workout for you in terms of, you know, moving cases around?
Work is the first workout of the day. I get here at 7 a.m. every morning, and I'm just throwing cases all day. You know, my company is very supportive of my fighting. They actually sponsor the fights. So,
okay.
You know, K&L Distributors will be there deep, and there'll be there will be a lot of chanting, and there'll be a lot of screaming, and there's going to be a lot of booing. Whether, you know, it's just something we're going to have to prepare for, because it's you know, they say it's not a team rivalry, but you know, we've been pretty quiet, and you know, they have a guy over there named Jared Faust who's fighting Charlie, and that boy just runs his mouth like no other. And you know, he's a talented wrestler, and that's just how he wants to promote himself, and that's cool. Promote yourself that way. But they act like there's no team rivalry, and there definitely is. There's only two main teams in Alaska, or in Anchorage, and that's Legacy and ABJJ. And how is that not a rivalry if we're competing against each other all the time? That makes no sense. It's not logical at all. He needs to rethink that, and then, you know, come across it again.
Final thing, Don, I appreciate the time. When you have coworkers who maybe don't know that you're a professional MMA fighter, are they surprised to find out that you're a fighter?
You know, I have this driver, his name is Cruz. And he drives the semi trucks with a beer, and I was talking to him, and, the front desk lady, I forgot her name. I just remembered her name yesterday for the first time. I heard it yesterday. And I told him, I was like, yeah, I fight professionally. He's like, no way. And he's like, what's your record? I was like, 5-0. He's like, seriously? And I was like, explaining everything to him. He's like, I would have never guessed. He told me that, you know, when I'm at work, I'm super calm and nice and respectful, and that he would have never guessed that would have been the nature that I would have had. And it's not, you know, it's more of the sport. It's a sadistic sport. And the reason why I love it is, there's no one to blame for anything. You get in there, you get beat up. That's your fault. Not your coaches, not your teammates. They put in the work with you. They gave you what you needed to do. You didn't capitalize, or you just weren't good enough at the time. You know, I played football for years, and every time we lost, I had an excuse to make against a teammate. You know, even if it wasn't me that made the excuse. So this is a sport that I love because, you know, it not only did it, you know, help me grow as a man or an athlete, but it's helping me learn that, you know, we have to take responsibility for our own actions, and that's why I love it. So,
and of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight here November 15th live on UFC Fight Pass. Dom, I appreciate the time. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you out on social media.
My Instagram is MochaBearMMA, all one word, and same with my Snapchat. And then if you just look up Dominic MochaBear Merriweather on Facebook, that's my page. I respond pretty quick, so you know, any questions or any advice that you guys would like, go ahead and hit me up, and I'll do my best to answer.
Awesome stuff there from Nico Novelli and Dom Merriweather. And you hear Nico maybe saying, hey, there's not really a gym rivalry, where you hear Dom Merriweather and obviously saying, yeah, there definitely is a little bit of a rivalry there. So definitely a nice little backstory to that main event for Alaska FC next Wednesday, November the 15th, live on UFC Fight Pass, which, you know, Fight Pass for me, I get the annual subscription to Fight Pass, so it's I pay $7.99 a month, and so it's like, you know, $95 a year for me. And my renewal is coming up here in the next week or two. And, you know, it's one of these things I've talked about, you know, Fight Pass, and, you know, and to me, it's not about, you know, what it costs. You know, $95 a year, it's not a money thing to me. But I do look at it as a consumer, and I look at the Fight Pass product. And there's certain months I sit there and say, is Fight Pass worth $7.99? You know, just because I look at Fight Pass and I just know that the product could be so much better. I mean, I love when they have the Contender Series on there. It gives me reasons to watch it, but if you're telling me the reason to get Fight Pass is for these early prelims that, let's be honest about it, one day we got for free on Facebook, or, you know, to watch various regional MMA, you know, sometimes I do wonder as a consumer whether it's worth it. Now, as someone who reports on the sport, it's kind of something necessary we do have to have, because it is, you know, we do got to watch the fights and whatnot. But, you know, sometimes I really do wonder with Fight Pass and kind of what the direction is of what, you know, the current ownership group of the UFC is going to do that. Now, in relation to Fight Pass, I put a thing out there the other day on social media, and because I saw some things on social media just kind of about, you know, how much it costs to be a UFC fan, and I ended up doing the math on this, and you realize that it only costs you, if you have Fight Pass yearly subscription and you buy all 12 UFC pay-per-views in 2017. Now, a lot of the times I go out and I watch a pay-per-view, you know, at a local establishment that's by me. But if you have a 12-month subscription for Fight Pass and buy every UFC pay-per-view in HD at $59.99, your total cost would be $815.86. And what I did on social media was I said, hey, you know, what's your thoughts on this? And I got a lot of responses about this. And Bill Davis, at Bill Davis Dude, says, good thing I quit drinking so I can afford my MMA addiction. Ha, ha, ha. RJ Clifford going, most expensive league to follow. And this is from a previous tweet that RJ Clifford have, where he said, NFL Sunday Ticket, $353.94. NHL Center Ice, $159.96. NBA League Pass, $200. MLB Extra Innings, $200. Brandon Coutinho at B Coutinho TSMA says, good thing I don't get every pay-per-view. Mears 222 saying, I actually thought it'd be more. I've probably cut it down to 400 to 500 then with my Fight Pass subscription. Next, Daniel J. Smith says, order the low def and save $120. Daniel, I don't know if I could do that. I really don't know if I could sit here and watch television in standard def. I just, you know, call me a TV snob, but I definitely got to watch it HD. Next up, this is from Dennis. He says, this is why it's a good thing in the UK to have BT Sports. I get all the pay-per-views year-round and only pay around £20 a month for the package. So it's another thing. This is from Tim Torres. Says, got rid of Fight Pass after 3 months. That's not enough value for $9.99 a month. Showtime replays pay-per-views in a week. UFC replays pay-per-views in ? Pay-per-view wise, only 1 to 3 are stacked enough to purchase a year. I follow play-by-play on an MMA site. My price is $60 to $180 a year. Then Nate Leahy says, seems like a lot at first, but only hardcore needs Fight Pass. And if you get a couple buddies to split every pay-per-view, you're down to like 100 and $50 each, which is something I totally agree with. You know, I think that in terms of being an MMA fan, if you want to watch the pay-per-view and you have a couple buddies that you watch the fights with, that's the best way to go. That's what me and two of my buddies do. You know, we either, you know, get at somebody's house or we go out to a local bar. And, you know, look, it's, you know, one of the things, and I do work in bar marketing, and, you know, there's a lot of things that I do see, you know, and, you know, I have seen that the way people view MMA in 2017 is just different. You know, it just, you know, you look at, you know, maybe even go back 5 years ago where the MMA audience, it was like you watched MMA because MMA was on, but now it's about, you got to give people a reason to go out there. I mean, look, it is a high cost to be a UFC fan in comparison to other sports, no question about it. And that price I listed did not even count into the fact of, you know, your cable or satellite, you know, TV bill, what it is every month. I mean, I have DirecTV, and, you know, look, it's not cheap. And, you know, so it was just something I kind of saw on social media that I wanted to mention just about what kind of the cost is. And, you know, I just, ultimately, as a consumer, I just hope the UFC makes Fight Pass a subscription service that you just say, you know what, there's a lot of value there. Right now, I don't see a lot of value in UFC Fight Pass. You know, when the Contender Series is there and, you know, say you have a full UFC fight card like you had with the Darren Till, Donald Cerrone card, I mean, okay, then there's value. But there's a lot of times I look at the UFC, you know, UFC Fight Pass, and I just say, as a consumer, is there a lot of value in paying for a yearly subscription, or is it just simply best to go month to month and basically every month you decide whether or not you want to give the UFC their money? I think it's something very interesting to kind of pay attention towards, you know, as time goes on. You know, look, I think when you look at Dana White, you know, attacking Colin Cowherd about comments he made, I think that probably tells you TV negotiations with the UFC and Fox are not going well. And it's really going to be interesting to kind of see how this does play out as we head into 2018 and into 2019. But coming up next, we're going to turn our attention to CES MMA. Of course, their next fight card is on November the 17th in Lincoln, Rhode Island. You're going to hear an interview with one of the fighters going to be a part of the main card, Richie Santiago. He is going to take on Sean Max. I'll play you that interview right now. When we come back, I'm going to tell you who the main event is of CES 47. Joining me now here on the MMA Report on Radio Influence, a man that's going to look to stay undefeated, CES 47, November the 17th, takes on Sean Mack. Richie Santiago. Richie, welcome back to the show. I appreciate time. When we, your last fight, I guess adversity is probably the best way to put it. You know, everyone has seen the fight. If you haven't seen the fight, go on YouTube. You can see what did transpire in that. Before I had you on here, I went back and I watched the fight, and obviously what you were able to, you know, stay in the fight and ultimately get the submission. How much did you maybe thank Keith Peterson after the fight for maybe not stepping in and stopping the action?
Yeah, man, that was a tough one, man. At a couple points there, I kind of thought to myself, like, wow, I might actually get knocked out here. And yeah, like you said, I mean, Keith Peterson, he could have stopped the fight at a couple points. Like when I lost my mouth guard, and then, you know, I was taking some big shots. You know, obviously I landed the knee, and that's what swung the momentum, and I was able to take him down and get the choke. But yeah, man, that was a tough fight. It was a lot of fun though. I had a blast.
I think it was a little before the knee. You were up against the cage, and he was, you know, landing some punches, and you'd put your hands up, and I was, and that's the point where you're thinking, if he's gonna stop it, he's gonna stop it. Mindset, when all that is going on, what are you think? Is it just merely survival mode, just getting back to instincts? I mean, because, you know, as fight fans, we're like, what is going through the athlete's mind when they're on the receiving end of these blows that outside looking in, they're like, oh man, this guy's almost out.
Yeah, like honestly, like I said, all I'm thinking is, I was kind of thinking like, okay, I might get knocked out here, and then I was kind of just like, when I was up against the cage, I was like, all right, I gotta fight back or they're going to stop this fight. You know what I'm saying? So even though I was getting hit, I was trying to swing back. And, you know, I was just, like you said, I was just in survival mode, you know?
And right when you got on his back, you locked it in real quick. You know, were you surprised how quickly you were able to get that submission in?
With the takedown, yeah, I mean, I wasn't sure what I was going to get him with. I mean, he was good with jiu-jitsu, but I knew that was kind of like my – it was like a last-ditch effort, you know what I'm saying? I knew once I got the takedown, like, I had to finish it right then and there. Like, I couldn't let the fight go on any longer because I was already beat up, you know?
Before we get into the fight here at CES 47, I know you've done a little bit of commentary for Cage Titans. So, yes. When you're sitting cage side and you're calling fights, do you find yourself taking mental notes about and maybe giving yourself a little bit of a different view of the fight game?
Yeah. I mean, commentating, man, it's so much fun. I love doing it. I've been doing it for Cage Titans. This is tomorrow actually is going to be my fifth show doing it. So, but yeah, you know, I always go into it. I'm always, you know, studying fighters, what guys do wrong, you know, whether it's amateur or pro. And, you know, I'm always taking notes on the things I like, things I don't like. But, yeah, man, it's a lot of fun. I love commentating.
Of course, Cage Titans available on Flow Combat on the podcast last week. We had Peter Barrett, who's stepping back in competition. And one of the things when I talked to Peter, he talked about adjustments, you know, that, you know, following that fight that he made. For you, I mean, I know you're making adjustments constantly every time you're in the training room, but is there any major, you know, sticking points in terms of preparing for this fight of maybe adjustments that you realize that you need to make?
Yeah, just, you know, done a lot of focus on just like, you know, cardio and strength training. I felt like that last fight, I got gassed in the second round, and that's why, you know, he was able to beat me up so bad, is I just got tired. You know, I didn't think he was a better fighter than me. I just thought he kind of outworked me there towards the end. But obviously, I was able to pull it out. But yeah, just working the cardio. You know, I don't want to get tired again. You know, Sean Mack's a tough dude, and I can't get tired in this fight. You know, so that's what I've been kind of changing.
In terms of cardio, is it just higher intensity cardio that you're doing?
Yeah, just, you know, putting in the road work, you know, getting my runs in every day, getting that extra workout in. I started, you know, doing cardio sessions at 6 a.m. in the morning. You know, like I said before, I work a full-time job. I go to work at 8 in the morning, and I'm there till 5 p.m. Then I'm at the gym from 6 to 9. And, you know, I started to realize, you know, it's kind of too hard for me to not only do, you know, MMA drilling and whatnot, and also get my cardio in all within like two and a half hours. So I was like, you know what, I got to really start pushing this. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to start doing two sessions a day. You know, so I go into the gym 6 a.m. I do cardio, I run, and then go to work. And then I come right back and I do my MMA stuff.
You mentioned about, you know, Sean Mack, tough opponent here. You know, when you got the fight offer and you start breaking him down, Was there something immediately just that stuck out to you, says, man, this is why this guy is, you know, has the record that he has?
Yeah, I mean, he's 6-2. Kid's tough. You know, he's from Michigan. I don't know what the talent pool is like out there, but he's one of the top guys in Michigan. So, you know, it's a really tough fight. It's a big step up. So, you know, I'm excited, man, to really just see where I'm at. You know, I've watched a couple of his fights. You know, he's explosive. He's tough. He's a pretty big dude at 25. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited. You know, it takes a tough fight like this to get me really motivated. And, you know, I'm real motivated right now. I'm excited.
Obviously, it's, you know, you want to put on a great performance there. What's the key to victory for you in your mind? I mean, is it, you know, part of it is, hey, I can't get gas. Like, you know, what happened last time? I mean, is that kind of the biggest key?
Yeah, I mean, keys to victory. Yeah, like you said, I can't get gassed. I got to, you know, pace myself. I got to be smart out there, man. And, you know, I got to have fun, you know. I love fighting. Like, you know what I mean? I do it because it's fun. So, you know, as long as I'm in there, when I'm in the back, I got a smile on my face. I come out, I'm having fun, you know. I'm excited.
Has there ever been a time where you just were not having fun? Is it maybe, you know, those training sessions where maybe you just, you know, you're like, oh man, I just don't feel like going to the gym today. I mean, is that pretty much the only time you're not having fun?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll have fights that are just back to back, and it's like back to back camps, and then that's when you really get run down, and it's just, you know, when it gets to you're just grinding every day in the gym, and your body just gets tired. You know, it can get. You know, it's not as fun that way. But right now, man, I'm having a lot of fun. I got two other guys that are fighting at Cage Titans tomorrow. And I've been helping them get ready. They've been helping me get ready. I got 2 weeks now. So, man, I'm in a good mindset right now. I'm excited and I'm ready to go.
Is it one of those things, like when you're at the Cage Titans event tomorrow night, you've got the headset on that you're going to be like, man, I want to get in there. I mean, is it kind of get the heart rate going up and like, man, I wish tonight was the night of my fight?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, you know, because I fought at Cage Titans. You know, I did a bunch of amateur fights there. And, you know, being in that building and not fighting it makes me kind of antsy. It makes me want to fight. And then what's even worse is, you know, my two friends are going to be fighting and I'm not going to be in that corner. I'm going to be commentating. So that gets pretty crazy. Cause it's like, I want to cheer for them, but at the same time I have to, you know, stay professional and commentate on it. So that's the toughest task tomorrow.
That is the tough thing as someone who does play-by-play, when you have relationships with people, but you got to be straight down the middle. You know, you can't favor one guy or the other. Was there ever a time where, like, you went back and watched it, like, oh, man, my favoritism really came out on that fight?
Yeah, I have made that mistake before, you know, looking back on some of the earlier shows, you know, because sometimes it's like you get an out-of-state guy and you don't really know who he is. And then he's going up against, you know, someone I know and I've trained with before or something. And then, you know, the out-of-state guy wins. And then I go back and I look at it and I'm like, wow, I really didn't give this guy his due. And he won the fight, you know.
That's why whenever I do play-by-play for MMA, I try to give equal time to each side of the fight and just try to find out as much information about the fight as I can. Because if that fight goes 15 minutes, it could be a time during the fight that there's a little draw period. But you know, good luck calling the fights tomorrow night. But your fight here, November the 17th, CES MMA 47 live on Access TV. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, you know, find me on Facebook, Richard Santiago, Instagram, Ricardo Miguel 1010. Twitter's RichieSant1010, and my Snapchat is Ricardo Miguel. Thank you to my gym, BST MMA and Fitness. I want to give a shout out to my guys, Brandon Vogel, Danilo Portugal, who are fighting tomorrow night at Cage Titans on Full Combat. And yeah, man, come see me, come get your tickets, and November 17th, let's do it.
And there you have my conversation with Richie Santiago. I appreciate him coming on the podcast. Talk about his matchup next Friday night at CES 47 as he takes on Sean Mack. Of course, this fight card will be on Access TV from the Twin River Casino there in Lincoln, Rhode Island. The main event of that fight card will be Greg Rebello versus Derek Brown. Reached out to CES this week, asked him what the main event was, and Greg Rebello will be the main event. The co-main event will be Luis Felix taking on Cody Carrillo. This is a non-title matchup, of course. Luis Felix is the CES lightweight champion. Of course, initially Sean Soriano was supposed to be on this fight card. He is no longer on the fight card. Also, a part of the six-fight main card, you'll have Nate Andrews versus Tyler Combs, Chris Moutinho versus David Garcia, and John Duma versus Mark Trader. I'm pretty sure that's how you say John's last name, but if I'm wrong, I do apologize to John there. But, you know, look, I think you know, when it comes to that CES card, you know, Greg Rebello, see how he does bounce back after losing on the Contender Series. Luis Felix is, you know, it's obviously, we all remember him as CS champion, ends up taking on Ryan Sanders in a catchweight matchup and loses. Hasn't defended the title since that catchweight matchup, so we'll see what happens there. Nate Andrews is definitely a guy on that card to pay attention to. Clearly, you know, he is a guy that is right there, I think, in terms of potentially getting into the UFC or at least getting on the Contender Series. And Richie Santiago, you just heard from another guy to pay attention. CES always does put together very quality cards there. So that is CES 47, which is next Friday night in Lincoln, Rhode Island. But coming up next will be our final interview here of this week's podcast. Man's going to be fighting in Arizona on November the 18th. It is Daniel Madrid. Had a chance to catch up with Daniel and talk to him about his upcoming fight. Talk about the fact that he has been away from action here for a while. We also talked about his daytime job working in a bank. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be stepping back inside competition. Come here November 18th. Iron Boy Promotions is Daniel Madrid. Daniel, I appreciate the time. Looking at your record, it has been some time since we have seen you inside competition. You know, first off, I mean, has it just been kind of frustrating to not be able to get inside MMA competition?
More than you can know, man. You know, when I was when I defended my middleweight belt for King of the Cage, you know, I was expecting to fight like a month after, or even 2 months out, and kept running into delays with trying to find an opponent. And then when we found one, it just kept getting pushed back further and further. And then when it finally came to an agreement, that's when I had my I had to get my meniscus repaired on my left knee, and had to take some time out for that. And then, you know, I had the Franco fight, which was supposed to be this April, and a week before the fight, I broke my hand. So, but I'm very excited to get back in.
Meniscus injury. It was that the worst time in your career, just because you just couldn't do anything about it?
No, I think the hand was more of a kind of dilemma for me. Like the knee, I could still walk on. I just couldn't fully straighten it out. But my hand was, knowing that everything else, it, like mind, body, sound, everything was perfect, but I just couldn't do anything with my right hand. That was the most frustrating thing that's ever hit me.
Were you still in the gym when all that was going on? Was it just one of the kind of those things of like, hey, I can't throw my right hand, but I can work on, you know, my kicks and other things? Was that kind of the mindset?
No, this happened during my last sparring for the fight. it was the first round. I don't know what happened. I threw a right hook, and I mean, it hit like my training partner's got a really hard head, I suppose, but I mean, I hit it perfect, and I just felt it didn't hurt. That's the weird thing. I just felt this pop. And actually, I sparred for another two rounds until I realized, I was like, oh shit, something's wrong with my hand. And then my wife made me go to the emergency room, and lo and behold.
And the story of you, of how you become an MMA fighter, was actually when your uncle was about to pass away, where he gave you advice, said you have two gifts. One of those gifts you knew was being a father. How long did it take for you to realize that your other gift was being a fighter?
Well, you know, my grandfather and my uncle told me, you know, in early age, like a man is always given two gifts, just like you said. One of those you instantly know, the other one you have to come to find out. At an early age, I knew I was going to be a fighter. My dad and my grandfather taught me boxing at an early age, and I started with kickboxing. I fell in love with jiu-jitsu at the age of 12, and I've continued on with it ever since. It wasn't until my older brother had his first child is when I knew my second gift, and that was to be a father.
And obviously, that's got to be your biggest motivation, is your children. Is it one of those motivations where those days when you're down and out, and you know, maybe ideally you just love to just kind of sit on the couch, you realize that, hey, I need to get in the gym because this is what I'm fighting for?
Honestly, no, it's the other way around. I think now with the age that I'm at and being a father of two stepchildren and then my own daughter now, there's times when I'll get down and out because I'm not with them, or that I work 9 hours a day at my normal job, and then I have to go over there for 3 hours. And then by the time I get home, everyone's asleep. So like I get maybe an hour with them in the mornings. So that part's the roughest for me, but it's like you said, it's the overall end result of what I'm trying to accomplish here.
And of course, November 18th, the next time you're going to be stepping inside competition, taking on Eddie here. What's your thoughts on Eddie? Just you know, what he's going to bring, you know, talent wise to the fight night.
I don't know much about Eddie besides just being in the local scene with him. I've seen a couple of different of his fights. We fought on the same card with M1 Global. I think he's a brawler. I think he's definitely a good athlete. He brings a lot to the table, and I wish I had a prediction for you on how this fight's going to end. All I know is it's going to be a very exciting fight. I think both of us bring an incredible amount of talents inside the cage, and it's just going to be just just an explosion of fireworks.
I mean, they always talk styles make fights. And, you know, I guess the cliche I always hear is like, hey, stylistically, I love this fight for me. You know, I mean, I know you're not going to give away your game plan. I know that very well. But, you know, stylistically, is there a reason why you like this matchup for yourself?
I'm excited to fight someone that is of the same height and length as I am. Okay. I've had a lot of people say they want to stand up with me, and wrestling pursues, and you know, my number one love is jiu-jitsu, so I have no problem going to the ground. It doesn't bother me. I've had, honestly, I think two fights in my career where I've had the opportunity to stand up. And now the first one was with Dashiro Matsui over in China, and then my second one was with John Paleologos over in California when I fought him in King of the Cage. So I'm definitely excited to see what's going to unfold here. It's like you said, I wish I could tell you I had a game plan. I really don't. I never have in my career. I just go out, and it's no different than any of us going to a normal job. That's how I treat it.
In terms of not having a game plan, is part of that thought process more about this is about me? It's not about, you know, trying to, you know, really think about your opponent, you know, kind of having more of an offensive mindset as opposed to a defensive mindset?
I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest, because the reason why is like, I don't like game planning, because game planning has to go into everything you do. Sparring, training. I think if you have a regimen for your training and then you're self-aware of what you're doing in regards to your sparring and the actual fight, I think is what makes more of an alert fighter. You look at a lot of people, a lot of successful fighters nowadays, like GSP and Chuck Liddell, you know, like some of the older ones, they never really had a game plan going in, but they were always reactive to what the situation brought them. And that's what I've always kind of surrounded myself with in my career.
You know, I was talking to another fighter recently. We were talking about read and react, because he came from, mm-hmm, the football field, and he said, you know, look, it's about me just kind of reading my opponent. That's kind of, I guess, the way I kind of sum up what you're saying is there, that this is just read and react, and, you know, it's not like he's going to throw something that I've never seen in training before.
Exactly.
And, you know, and look, another win here puts you in a great position. Have you even allowed yourself to think about where a win puts you kind of in the scheme of things?
No. Because I like to focus on the now. Like, there's no point for me to jump to the future if I have no control of it. Mm-hmm. Right now, I have control of what I'm able to do for this fight in regards to my training and my mindset. So that's what I'm going to focus on. And then after we get the W, and then I can start to think about it.
You mentioned about the daytime job. Any of your coworkers, based on your personality, are they surprised that you're a professional fighter?
They are, actually. The problem is my ears give it away. You know, like everyone here at the bank, like members and everything, they all know like, oh, you're a wrestler or you're a fighter, but I'm not soft spoken, but I'm soft hearted in a sense. Like, I'm very kind. I'm a loving person. And I think it comes from being a family man. So I think people get surprised when they hear that I'm a fighter, or if they've seen me fight, how the switch takes place. And I'm a whole different person.
I always talk to guys about perception versus realities that fighters have to go through. You know, there's, you know, people outside of the fight game, you know, they naturally have perceptions about fighters. And, you know, like, I remember Benson Henderson was telling me one time, he's like, you know, people just, you know, maybe don't understand that I'm an educated guy. Or I get a popular answer is, I just want people to know I'm a nice guy. What would you want people to know about you?
That I'm a loving person, and that I'm not about ripping someone's head off, or, you know, that, cause that's the stigma that all fighters tend to get, unfortunately. And there's a few bad apples within the crowd of MMA where we get that reputation. But like Benson said, you know, most of us are intelligent people that have degrees, that have gone to school, if not to get the degree, but to just further their education. But unfortunately, we don't get that opportunity to show that, you know, all we're seeing as the two guys that go into a cage and punch each other.
Is there any way you think that perception can ever change?
I think social media is going to have a big part of it. Just the ability for the fighter to reach out to the fans and just allow them to see what their daily life is. You know, that's why I like the UFC countdowns, because yeah, you get to see how their training's going and whatnot, but you get to see another side of them, which is the family side, and you know how they deal with that. And it's something that it's interesting.
I always tell you know, friends of mine that if they want to get their wife or girlfriends involved in MMA, have them watch the countdown show. Just start there, because it really does, as you said, tells a story of who they are away from the cage. But you've got your fight here, November the 18th, Iron Boy Promotions in Arizona. Daniel, I really appreciate the time. Let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Right now, you can check me out on Instagram and Tumblr at Daniel Madrid MMA. Tumblr is Daniel Madrid BJJ. My Twitter is Daniel Madrid MMA. I think my Facebook, just search for Daniel Madrid. Damn it, it's me. It's a picture of me and my daughter, so.
And I appreciate Daniel Madrid coming on the podcast, talking about his fight coming up next week in Arizona, and good luck to him. But I do want to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking about the MMA that is going on this weekend. Of course, on Friday, we've got Bellator 187, also ONE Championship 64. Saturday, you have Copa Combate and also UFC Fight Night 120. First up, talk a little bit about that Bellator card that is coming up on Friday night. Of course, that is going to be a tape delay card from Dublin. Unfortunately, the next two Bellator events are on tape delay, so unfortunate for us here in the United States that we're going to have to watch those fights on tape delay. But of course, the main event, AJ McKee versus Brian Moore. Initially, James Gallagher was going to be the main event of this fight card, but we all know James had to pull out due to a knee injury, so AJ McKee now headlines this event against Brian Moore. Also, in the co-main event, you have got baby Slice Kevin Ferguson Jr. looking to go to 2-1 in his career. He's going to take on Fred Freeman, who is 1-0 in his career. Also, Sinead Kavanaugh is on this fight card. And also, you are going to have Paul Redmond a part of this fight card as well. And really, I think in terms of a reason to watch Bellator 187, clearly, you know, with AJ McKee taking on Brian Moore, and also you got to be interested a little bit in Baby Slice as well, trying to work on getting interviews with both those guys before they fight here on Friday. So if I'm able to get those interviews, they will be up on the MMAReport.com. And speaking of Bellator, on next week's episode of the podcast, I am going to be joined by Patricio Pitbull, John Salter, and Daniel Veichel, all who fight next week at Bellator 188. Of course, that is a fight card that is actually on November the 16th in Israel, but will not air till the next day here in the United States, which, you know, it's just unfortunate, you know, and especially, you know, a guy like Patricio Pitbull is, you know, to me, a guy that is clearly must watch TV. Also on Friday, you have ONE Championship 64. Of course, that'll be internet pay-per-view. Then on Saturday, you have Combates America with their one night tournament that, you know, I don't know if you saw, I had put a tweet out about, I want to say it was Bellator 186, where, you know, I mentioned like, oh, you know, it just doesn't seem a lot of buzz, and Colin Campbell, the man behind Combates America, said, oh, that's because everyone's talking about Combate, Copa Combate. I'm like, okay, you keep telling yourself that. But when you look at this tournament, the rules did come out for this tournament. So it's going to be three stages. You'll have four quarterfinal bouts. Then the second stage is the two semifinal bouts. And then the third stage is the championship bout. Now, the quarterfinal round will be a one-round fight at 5 minutes. And then your semifinal matchups and championship matchups will be three rounds at 3 minute rounds. So you look at it, if you go all, you're talking about, you know, they're obviously doing a little bit with the rules there, but, you know, John Castaneda is a part of this fight card, a guy we've had on the podcast before. He's definitely a guy to pay attention to. Of course, that fight card is going to air on NBCSN beginning at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. And, but I mean, look, I wish Combate America is the best, and I hope they draw ratings. It'll be interesting to kind of see what kind of ratings they draw. overall in comparison to what, you know, the World Series of Fighting slash PFL have done. But you're going up against UFC Fight Night 120, which, you know, is a great fight card. Point and simple. It is just an awesome fight card. When you say John Dodson versus Marlon Moraes is on the prelims, that should tell you how good of a fight card it is. I will say this. I was very surprised to see that was on the prelims. You know, if I was going to take one fight off the main card, it would probably be the matchup between Nate Marquardt and Cesar Ferreira. But when you look at that six-fight main card, you've got, of course, that main event is Dustin Poirier taking on Anthony Pettis. So we'll see how Pettis looks. You know, returning to 155 as he tries to get back up there into title contention. Then you got Matt Brown in his final fight taking on Diego Sanchez. I mean, look, how could that fight suck? I mean, that fight has just, you know, to use the old Bjorn Rebney reference, that fight has fireworks written all over it. I think it's pretty safe to say someone's probably getting knocked out in that fight. Then you got a heavyweight matchup, Junior Albini versus Andre Orlovsky. You have to imagine if Orlovsky loses that fight, his days in the UFC are over. Also, you got a nice bantamweight matchup, Rafael Sunsal versus Matthew Lopez. Big opportunity here for Matthew Lopez to potentially, you know, easily put himself in the top 10 with a victory. And then Joe Lauzon, Clay Guida. I guess we probably should just say that's probably your fight of the night. Also in this fight card, you've got Sage Northcutt against Michelle Quinones. That's going to be a part of the FS1 prelims. Also, you got Angela Hill. She'll be on those prelims as well, taking on Nina Ansaroff. You will have three matchups on the Fight Pass prelims. Court McGee, Sean Strickland. I really like that matchup. Also, you got Carl Roberson, of course, making his UFC debut as he is going to take on Darren Stewart. So a really nice fight card that the UFC has on Saturday night. I know I'm going to a birthday party at my buddy's house, and I know, you know, he's one of the guys I always watch the fights with, as we'll have the fights on as a little birthday party. And we were texting back and forth on Saturday when I was in New Orleans when saw that the UFC was heading to Orlando, and basically told the boys, I said, well, I guess we're going to Orlando in February to watch the fights. And, you know, and I find myself, you know, in those type of situations, I like going to the fight with the boys as opposed to, you know, being on press row, just ultimately have more fun. And that's one of the things I'll tell you. I think when I talk about, you know, regrets of my MMA career, of things I wish I would have done earlier in my career, and one of those things was I wish I would have sat in the stands with fans more, gone out to bars to watch events more, because it really gives you a much better idea of what people think about this sport. But really looking forward to watching those fights on Saturday night. You know, Poirier Pettis, man, I you know, I'll have my official picks on the preview podcast, but love that matchup. Brown Sanchez, I mean, look, that fight should be absolutely bonkers. Lauzon Guida should be bonkers as well. I mean, the Dodson Moraes fight, clearly Poirier Pettis is my number one fight for that fight card. But man, Dodson Moraes might be my number two fight of that fight card. So should be a great weekend of UFC fights. Of course, we'll have a preview podcast for that fight card on Friday morning. It'll probably post around sometime between probably 10:30 and 11 Eastern time. So look out for that. Of course, this podcast comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Be sure to check out some of the shows we have at RadioInfluence.com, whether if you're looking for football shows with Landry Football, Games Galore, Three Dog Thursday, Yards and Stripes. Maybe if you're looking for a baseball show, Inside the Dugout is back on Radio Influence. Or maybe you're looking for other type of podcasts, check out Leveling the Playing Field with Bobby Sue Doyle Hazard. Also, we have Sitting Ringside with David Penzer as he gives a look into the wrestling business. You know, he was joined by Shark Boy this week, so be sure to check out all the podcasts we have over at RadioInfluence.com. I want to thank all my guests coming on this week's podcast. Appreciate Daniel Galvan coming out at the beginning of the show to recap UFC 217 and Bellator 186. Also, appreciate Robert Watley, Nico Novelli, Dom Merriweather, Richard Santiago, and Daniel Madrid all coming on this week's episode of the podcast, which, of course, you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
One of the smartest men in the history of the business of professional wrestling, and one of the greatest storytellers in the history of professional wrestling. Welcome, Jim Cornette, to Sitting Ringside. As far as the scaffold matches went, I know that you guys prided yourself on having really entertaining matches, and scaffold matches isn't exactly the greatest work rate type of match.
No, they suck.
So, yeah. So what were your thoughts about that? Did that frustrate you, or you just really, that was what they wanted you to do, so you did it?
Well, no, because when you're in the main event of the Sam Houston Coliseum and there's 12,000 people there, it's sold out and the fire marshal has closed the door, you're like, okay, I'll put up with having a subpar match this particular fine evening. The boys didn't enjoy taking the bumps, Bobby and Dennis. The scaffold was not nearly as high then as the Starcade scaffold would be later on. But, it was a profitable match, and still the people got into it. It drew those crowds because they wanted to see it. Even if it wasn't a bunch of backdrops and high spots, there was drama there, and the boys could work that and milk it. You know, and with Ricky and Robert, it was easy because they were young and athletic too, and I won't say easy to do a scaffold match, but, it was preferable than anybody else. So, all in all, we gave people what they wanted to see in that particular instance, which was, it didn't have to be the greatest match as long as they saw us get the shit kicked out of it.
Well, I could see like Robert hanging off, like you guys are trying to push him off the scaffold, and he's hanging off by one foot, and the girls are probably crying. So,
my God, yes. And I mean, anytime you would even start to go over the edge, people would start screaming, but Hoot and Bobby are underneath it, monkey barring across and kicking each other, while Dennis has got up the top ramming his bloody head into the rails around the end of the scaffold and everything. It could still be exciting, but you had to. Once again, it wasn't exciting from a sports entertainment standpoint where we're going to rate this thing. It was exciting from the standpoint of that's exactly what the fans came to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And back then, they bought in, and unlike now, that would never work now. But but back then they bought in and they believed every.
No, and now if the guy took the bump off a scaffold and his head didn't fall off and roll into the third row, people would go, you fucked up.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.